Welcome to Book Notes, the Ohio Channel's conversation show featuring Ohio authors and books about Ohio. The recipient of a National Endowment for the Arts Literature Fellowship and Sachs Fund Prize, Cincinnati-based Leah Stort has written five books. Her 2015 novel, The New Neighbor, has gained positive reviews from the New York Times Book Review and People Magazine. And thank you, Leah Stort, for joining us today.
My pleasure.
The New Neighbor is your fifth novel.
Mm-hmm.
And we like to talk about mechanics, but the characters in here were, I just want to ask you a few questions about this.
Okay.
So the two main characters are Margaret,
mm-hmm.
who is a, what is it when you're 90s, a nonagenarian?
Nonagenarian, I think.
Okay, that's a weird, I can't
pronounce
that.
I don't know if I've ever said that out loud.
So she's in her 90s, and then Jennifer is escaping from a past, and I don't want to give too much of the ending away. But as a writer, here are two, the one, Margaret's very cantankerous, and it's hard to like her, even though we see inside and we see that her motivation. So mm-hmm. you become, she's a difficult person.
Uh-huh.
And then Jennifer has this, like, emotional blockage or something, this emotional. So how do you create that and then live with that for the amount of time that a novel takes to write?
Margaret was actually fairly easy because most characters have a gap between what they think and what they say. And for Margaret, the gap is much smaller. Mm-hmm. So it was fun to write a character who would say things that other people would repress. And who was it's fun to write someone who's a little cantankerous, to let go of the need to be polite. Jennifer was much harder because she is so guarded and she does have that emotional blockage that you were talking about. So that was tricky, figuring out what she would say and what she wouldn't when there were moments where she did need to open up. I did some revising, figuring out to what degree she would reveal herself and when, and whether it would be plausible when she did, after being so careful to conceal. So she was trickier. She was actually much harder to write.
So where do novels start for you?
These days I have a fairly complete idea before I get started, by which I mean I know who the main characters are. I have a sense of what the book is primarily about, and I don't outline point by point, but I have a sense of the shape of the story. That wasn't true when I started writing. When I started writing, I just would start and make a mess, and then a lot of the process was trying to clean up the mess that I had made. So, but now I've come to a point where I do have a pretty good idea of what I'm going to do before I start.
Is there an incident? Like, are you in the shower? Are you driving? You're like, oh, this might make I can flesh this out.
That's a good question. I do think that I'm more inspired recently by circumstance, so incident. This book came about because I had two separate things I'd been thinking about, and one was I was imagining a confession novel where a woman might or might not have killed someone, and you wouldn't know until the end of the story whether she did. And I imagined she would be speaking in the first person. Mm-hmm. And then I had tried for years to write a World War II novel, a historical novel that was based on my grandmother's experience as an army nurse in France, Germany, and Austria. And I had put that aside for several years. And then it occurred to me that maybe I could go back to that material if I made it the backstory to a contemporary novel. So then the character had to be 90 in order to make that novel contemporary and have flashbacks to World War II. And then at some point it occurred to me that I could bring these two ideas together.
So Margaret, it was a nurse in World War II. Mm-hmm. When you're taking these memories of your grandmother's experience, do you worry like, oh, if I make this part of my grandmother, then like my grandmother's like, she's not gonna like Margaret.
Well, she died actually about a decade ago, so I didn't have to worry about that. I did make a point to my relatives, you know, her children, that a lot of this at this point was made up. The novel that I was trying to write originally was more closely connected to her actual experience. It was episodic, it was anecdotal. That was one reason I had trouble finishing it, I think. But once you put a story, once you build a story that's past and present, there has to be something that's going to be revealed about the past, or the reader will wonder why we keep going back to it. When we write, we can rely on certain reader expectations. That's why if a reader picks up something that they know is a murder mystery, if the body doesn't appear for 15 pages, they'll be okay with that because they know it's coming. Mm-hmm. If the reader picks up something they know is a romance, mm-hmm. then they immediately apply certain expectations about how that story will unfold. So it's the same with that structure. As soon as you give a reader that structure, they know that something big will be revealed about the past. Otherwise, why are we telling that story? So once I decided on that structure, I had to change how the story unfolded in the past so that there would be things to reveal.
So you just gave me two rules of writing.
Uh-huh.
How did you learn that from your school or have you learned that just from the act of writing?
I've learned it from the act of writing, but perhaps more profoundly, I've learned it from the act of teaching, because what teaching requires is that you articulate how fiction works over and over and over to your students. So the more I do that, the more I learn.
So you are faculty at University of Cincinnati, mm-hmm. and how long have you been faculty?
I've been there since 2007.
Okay, so that means a number of years, uh-huh. almost 10 years, right? Yeah. So how much do you think being a teacher affects you as a writer now? Because you were a writer before you were a teacher.
I was, yeah, but I think partly what I was talking about, where I have a better sense of the structure, of the shape of the story, I think that a lot of that has evolved through teaching. That because I do spend so much time articulating how fiction works, I make more conscious decisions at the beginning. I think when I was writing but I wasn't yet teaching, I did a lot more things instinctively. And then had to go back and make conscious decisions so that they would work.
So do you think that that ever gets in the way? Like in one sense that before you had this structure, that it was easier to just sit down like, okay, I don't know where I'm going, I'm just going to let it happen. The muse is just going to come down and
I'd say yes and no, because it's freeing to just allow yourself to write whatever comes into your mind. But then if your goal is a finished novel, then you have... As I said before, you've created a big mess for yourself that then you have to go back and clean up. I think that when you've done a lot of planning beforehand, sometimes the actual act of writing feels too mechanical. Like, now I need a scene where this happens, but I don't feel inspired, to use that word, to write that scene. Then I think it becomes a process of having made these decisions and then trying to forget that you made them so that you can re-enter that unconscious space that I think we're all looking for when we write. Ultimately, are those moments where it's just coming, different writers describe that experience in different ways, but that feeling that you're just living the scene, it's just coming through you, you're not making conscious decisions. You have to try to get to that place after having made conscious decisions. And that can be hard, but I'd say that the overall process is actually easier when I've made decisions at the beginning. Because I have a fairly clear idea of what I'm doing. There's a phenomenon, I see this happen to my graduate students a lot, where you arrive in the middle of a novel and you haven't quite figured out what it's about. That's a difficult place to be.
So I'm interested in the psychology that's going into this. Is that so we have the intellect, so we have the mind, uh-huh. and then we have intuition.
Yes.
And so when you're writing, you've got syntax, continuity, structure and all this kind of stuff. And then you have actually plot and all this kind of things. And then the intuition would be then maybe the emotion and the directions that these people are going. So when you've been engaged in work that you've enjoyed, how much do you think that it's the intellect versus how much do you think that it's your intuition?
I find it really hard to separate those two things, because one thing I always tell my students is that they are learning to think about this stuff consciously so that then it can become unconscious again. So my favorite metaphor is dancing. So when you're learning a certain dance, you have to count, you have to look at your feet, you have to count the beats. But there's a certain point where your body just knows how to move. So you learned that deliberately. You learned that with your mind, but then it's just instinct. It becomes instinct. Mm. So I think that is what we're going for, that we are learning these things deliberately, but then we don't have to stop and process every minute decision because a lot of this intellectual process of learning how fiction works has become instinct.
Interesting. So how do you know when you're writing something? How do you know if it's good?
Well, that's a really hard question. I know when it's pleasurable to write it, and those tend to be the parts that I think of as the best parts. Whether they actually are the best parts for anyone else, I don't actually know. But the scenes where I am not aware of the room, I stop hearing whatever music is playing, I do become completely immersed in the scene. And I think it you do live it in a way when you arrive in that space, which again is the experience we're all chasing. Those are the parts that I always feel like are the best, as opposed to things that came very slowly, where I had to really eke out sentence by sentence. I always feel like those parts aren't that good, but I don't know. There's no way for me to separate my experience of writing the book and the actual product when I look at it. This is a passage from The New Neighbor. 90-year-old Margaret is talking about when she was in the Army Nurse Corps during World War II and first landed on Normandy Beach. This is how it is when you keep moving from the ordinary to the extraordinary and back again. The world expands to include a fleet of ships, a coastline, the sky, black with planes, and then contracts to the wet heat of your clothing, the taste of salt water in your mouth, and later the routines of helmet baths, amputations, waking to the whoosh and smash of shells, and all of that is ordinary, ordinary. The very ordinariness of it is the strangest thing you could have imagined. I suppose the idea with training for what you cannot imagine is that when nothing else holds, when the world becomes a place you've never seen before, that training will keep you moving. Certainly, we'd never practiced clambering down the side of a ship on a net, but we'd had plenty of practice in doing what we were told. The net must have swayed a little with the weight and movement of other bodies, but I don't remember fearing I would fall. I remember I kept my eyes on the men still on the ship, and they grew smaller and smaller to me, as I must have done to them. At the bottom, I got in a smaller boat, a landing craft, and Kay was in there too, and a few of the other nurses. When we got near the beach, the front of the boat went down and we walked into the water. I had never been so hot, hunching through the water to the shore. It was like a steam bath inside my gas-impregnable clothing, and I was so weighted down with blanket and tent, gas mask and canteen, first aid kit and shovel, that once I got out of the boat, I couldn't stand up straight. The equipment was arranged very carefully. You had to do it just so to make it fit, and it was all very well as long as you kept your feet, but if I'd fallen on my back, I would have been lodged there like a beetle. When I think about it now, I don't know how I made it down the net in the first place with all that stuff hung all over me. Someone told me to go, and I went, and that is what it is to be in the Army, and sometimes just what it is to be alive.
So you live and teach in Cincinnati.
I do.
How much do you think living in Ohio or living in Ohio City has informed your writing?
Well, I have a book. It's called The History of Us. It's the book before this that's set in Cincinnati. So in the case of that book, quite a lot. And that book came about because I grew up military, so I think I just instinctively pay a lot of attention to the culture of each new place. And as I was doing that after we moved to Cincinnati and thinking this could be the place where I live the rest of my adult life, I think that gave rise to that book, which is very much about Cincinnati itself and how people feel about living there.
The great thing about Ohio is that it's got a relatively low cost of living.
So that's definitely true.
And it enables you to write because you don't have to, you know, be living in San Francisco or
right.
LA.
So absolutely.
Does that relate at all, like just how you can actually raise a family?
It's more possible to be an artist here and survive than elsewhere. And now I'm actually thinking about writing a historical novel set in Cincinnati. So I've been reading a great deal about specifically around the 1820s. I went to the Ohio Historical Library and called up letters from the archives and read those. And What I think is really interesting about that time period is how intimate the connection was between people's sense of themselves and people's sense of the growing, rapidly growing city, because they had come there to make their fortune. And so their sense of personal success was really tied up with the sense of the success of the city. I think that's really interesting.
I read that you write with music.
I do.
You just put it on. So, and is it like songs with words, or do you need it to, and that doesn't interfere?
No, because I usually play something that I've heard many times. And I also usually look for something that I associate emotionally with the book. So I listened to a lot of melancholy music while I was writing this one. And I think that's part of how I get myself in that, I try to get myself in that mental space where I'm in the mood of the book. I'm connecting to the characters' emotions is through the music. And then if I successfully become immersed in the writing, I actually don't hear it anymore.
Huh. Do you ever then go back and hear that music later and be like, ugh, let's not listen to this song again?
There is a sense that I've used up that music after I've played it over and over with a book, then I am possibly less likely to listen to it as much when I'm done with that book.
So you have a full-time teaching schedule.
Uh-huh.
What is your writing discipline? How do you get time to do this?
Well, during the school year, I try to make sure there's one day a week that I just set aside for writing, because I find it difficult to switch modes to teach a class in the morning and then go home and write. I've never quite been able to figure out how to do that. So I try to make sure there's at least one day a week, and sometimes I have a schedule that allows more time than that. And then, of course, in the summer, I try to write as much as I can. Every day is not completely possible because I also have children, but more possible. And then in the last couple of years, what I've been doing is going to a writer's colony, actually in Suwanee, Tennessee, where this book is set. I'll go for a week at the end of each semester. And what that allows me to do is feel less anxiety during the semester about the fact that I'm not getting any writing time, because I know that week is coming. And I also think that that week is very useful when there's been a kind of buildup. You've been thinking about it, you've written a little bit here and there, your mind has been working on it, and then you have this time and space, and I've found that I'm very productive those weeks.
I wanted to ask about, you know, these colonies and workshops. How as a professional writer, what would you suggest to beginning writers, the importance of those?
Well, the colony, I think, is most important once you know what you're doing, because no one's helping you in that case. It's time and space and solitude. And so that's an opportunity to produce work. When you're just beginning, it's vital to have readers, whether those are peers you're in a writing group with or a teacher that you're taking a class with. It's really important to have people who will tell you what's working and what isn't. So I always recommend that people take a class, that people join a writing group, that they find some way to access other people's opinions.
How important is perspiration versus inspiration?
Probably a lot more important, honestly, because writing's a practice and a discipline, like any art form, but almost like anything. And we all know, all writers will tell you this, that we've all known very, very talented people over the course of our education and careers who no longer write. So the difference was who kept up with the practice and who didn't.
I don't know if this is unique to the field, but I feel like when I speak to artists, they have a compulsion to make art, it's painting or sculpting or stuff like that. But sometimes when I talk to writers, they have a compulsion to write, but sometimes it feels like they're tortured to sit down. Like it's just so hard.
Definitely true.
So I wonder what that is, to have that need to express, but then like, oh, actually sitting down, it's so hard. How to struggle to finally do that.
I don't know. Do other artists don't have that experience as much, you think?
Do you set something up like it's going to be a 2,000 word day or a...
Not anymore, but when I finished graduate school and I had to write without deadlines, I had a rule that I had to write 500 words a day. So then I would sit down and make myself work and constantly check the word count.
When do you know that a novel isn't, you talked about the World War II novel that you're working on,
right.
World War II story. When do you know that after you've put in some work and everything like that, that it's just not going to happen?
Well, in the case of that book, I had met with some resistance from my editor, and I was going to persevere anyway because I really wanted to write the book. It was a book that I had kept trying to write, and then I would put it aside and write a different book, and then I would go back to it. And I've had two different editors. My first editor was only edited my first book, and then I've been with the same editor for the next ones. And the first editor wasn't interested in that book, and I wrote a different book, and then my current editor had doubts about it. I would have persevered anyway, except for that I just got stuck to a point that I couldn't proceed, and it's really the only time that's happened to me. Mm-hmm. I think it was because, as I said, it was so episodic. Mm-hmm. I didn't know how to end it, because mm-hmm. it didn't have... One thing I always say to my students when I teach a graduate novel workshop, I say, what question does the first page ask that the ending is going to answer? I don't think I knew. Huh. In that case, what question the beginning asked that the ending would answer. So I had no idea really how to wrap it up. I didn't quite know what climax we were moving toward. You know, the experience of being in war is so much about things happening to you. Mm-hmm. And I think in order to successfully shape that into a narrative, you have to find something that person is trying to accomplish, something there, or a love story, you know. So there's something where their actions matter in the face of this much larger thing where they could be killed at any time, where all of these incidents over which they have no control are interrupting their story. And I hadn't quite found that with that book, and so I just put it aside.
Do you start your novels with the question that's going to be answered? Did you start with knowing what that end is going to be?
These days I do. I didn't used to. But these days I have a pretty good sense. I feel like it goes better when I know what that question is, mm-hmm. and when I know, kind of broadly speaking, what the theme is, mm-hmm. and what it's about, and also when I know what's the primary emotion. Mm-hmm. Is this a book about love? Is this a book about grief? Is this a book about loneliness? All those things help me stay on track.
I was just going to say that, you know, you do write a lot about relationships, and I thought, well, that's basically everything is based on how characters relate, but it seems very relationship forward. How many, you know, whether here it's a relationship between neighbors, whether it's a relationship between a husband and a wife and these things, how much of your personal experience helps to inform these characters?
It really has more to do with observation. So that version of personal experience. I don't typically write autobiographically, and there's nothing autobiographical in this one. But I have spent time with a great aunt who's in her 90s and had a very unusual life for a woman of her generation. She never married, she never had kids. She was a professor at UCLA. And she's still very lucid and very sharp-tongued. So paying attention to her, the dynamic between her and other people, that definitely informed the book. Mm-hmm. In the case of the book that's so much about marriage, husband and wife, what happens in that book is that the protagonist learns that her husband has had a one-night stand, and then there's a long period of falling apart. And I had a friend with a small child learn that her husband had actually been having an affair for a year. So I observed that experience, and that ends up being a large part of it, is paying attention to how you see other people react, the nuances of interaction is definitely a lot of what I'm interested in.
That's great, and unfortunately we are out of time, but I have time for four questions. This is our little speed round.
So all right.
Looking for just short answers to this. So, okay. So pen or pencil?
Pen.
Longhand or computers?
Mostly computer, unless I'm stuck, and then I go to longhand.
Interesting. What are you reading right now?
The Throwback Special by my colleague Chris Batchelder.
And then finally, what would the Leah of now, the five novel under under her wing already, say to the Leah that was just starting out?
I guess I'd say you'll figure it out, because I was very intimidated to start my first novel, and for a long time thought it was not something I could do. That first novel is a daunting experience. So yeah, I guess I would say that.
That's great. The New Neighbors, the most recent novels, or something else that's in the hopper?
Yes, I have a book that should be out next summer that I'm about to turn in. And at the moment, it's called What You Don't Know About Charlie Outlaw.
Oh, very interesting. Highly suggest this as a read. If you start it in the later evening, no, you're going to be up all night, because you're going to want to read it to the end in one sitting. So thank you very much
for
your time.
Thank you. Thanks.